How could I? I don't have a phone. Harry is silent on the other side of the fence. It's hard to read his expression, hard to see through the fence, and the beard and baseball cap obscure a lot of his face. All I want to do is burst through the gate and wrap my arms around him.
Graham must have taken your phone away, he finally says, because of me.
No, I start to tell him I never had a phone, but then I realize I don't know if that's true. I can't remember what happened yesterday, or the day before that, or a year before that. If Harry says I had a phone, I probably did. So why don't I have one anymore?
I used to get in touch with you through your phone, Harry explains. Graham got mad about it, so I guess he took the phone away. He's a manipulative bastard.
I flinch at this description of the man who introduced himself to me as my husband. He seemed nice enough, and the letter I wrote to myself about him was complimentary, and not nearly so complimentary about Harry.
You know Graham? I ask.
He laughs bitterly.
Yes, I know Graham.
Oh. He lets out a long sigh.
I'm sorry. I wish I could tell you he's a great guy. I wish he were a great guy, but he isn't.
Harry, you've got to get me out of here.
I can't.
Why not? Just come to the door and tell him that I'm leaving with you.
It's not that easy. I wish it were.
Ziggy comes up beside me and nuzzles my hand. Tears gather in my eyes.
I don't like being here. I want to leave. Please help me.
Harry is quiet. I want him to tell me everything is okay and that he's going to get me out of here. But with every passing second, I'm realizing that's never going to happen.
I wanted to see if you were okay, he says. But I think I should leave you alone. I'm not helping you. I thought I could help you. I wanted to so badly. But I'm not. I'm just making things worse. I'm making Graham angry at you.
No, I grip the fence with my fingers. Don't leave. I need you.
He stands there, not leaving, but not saying anything either.
Please, Harry.
The tears start rolling down my cheeks.
I love you. I thought we were going to spend our lives together. Please help me, please.
He shakes his head on the other side of the fence. He slides his sunglasses back on. He's leaving. Oh, God, he's leaving me here.
Harry, I whimper. Please.
He heaves a deep sigh.
One time when we met, he says, you told me where you think he hides your phone at night. In the ottoman next to the recliner. There's a charger in there.
I nod.
I'll call you when I get my phone.
No, his voice is sad. You shouldn't. Don't call me. But you should have your phone. It's not fair that he took it because of me.
Harry.
Bye, Tess.
I cling to the gate as I watch him walk away, suppressing the urge to scream out his name. I loved Harry Finch. I wanted to marry him and spend my life with him. I wanted to have children with him, and now I have a terrible feeling I will never see him again. Chapter 34. I can't search for the phone while Graham is still around. I have to wait for him to go to work. It's another agonizing half hour of bringing me back into the living room to introduce me to a woman named Camilla. Camilla is absolutely beautiful, and it's also clear that she is going to be my jailer today, because nobody trusts me to be alone. After Graham leaves, I'm left alone with Camilla. She smiles brightly at me, which makes me want to hit her.
Is there anything you'd like to do today?
I'd like to go to work and be a productive member of society, I say. The smile drops off her face.
Tess, don't worry, I'm just going to watch some television.
I glance at our almost ludicrously large television screen. I'll stay out of your way. I'm hoping Camilla will go in the kitchen or upstairs, but instead she just stands there, looking at me.
Listen, Tess.
I shouldn't have made that sarcastic remark. Now she feels sorry for me. I should have pretended I was happy with my situation.
I'm fine. Don't worry about me.
We'll have a nice time today, she says. I promise. We can take Ziggy for a walk. Go shopping for whatever you want. Maybe some clothing?
I don't say what I'm thinking, which is that why would I enjoy buying clothing? The fun of buying outfits is looking forward to wearing them, but when there's no tomorrow, the fun is lost. But I don't say any of that. Instead, I force a smile. That sounds great. She frowned, still lingering in the living room. Was Graham a jerk to you this morning? I shake my head. No, I mean, he was fine. He made me breakfast, although it was a little burned. And he gave me that pomegranate juice that I apparently like so much. Camilla gives me a funny look. You hate that pomegranate juice. I do? I once poured you a glass of it and you acted like you were drinking cyanide. I mean, I think it's pretty gross too, but you really hated it. Did you like it this morning? I remember how Graham set the glass of juice down in front of me. I took a sip and immediately ran to the sink. He followed me there and watched me decontaminate my mouth. At the time, I thought he just seemed worried about me. But in retrospect, he had this little smile lingering on his lips, like he was amused by the whole thing. My stomach turns. I'm beginning to think that letter wasn't right. I'm not sure my husband is such a great guy. But I can't let on to Camilla that I know the truth, and I definitely can't tell her about the cell phone. So I just shrug. It was okay. Finally, she goes upstairs to work on cleaning, and she leaves me alone in the living room to watch television. But I have no intention of watching television. I'm finding that goddamn phone. There's a leather recliner next to the sofa. In front of it is a brown ottoman. I bend down beside it, feeling the edges. That's when I realize that the top comes loose. I slide it off and peer inside. There's a phone inside, identical to the one I saw Graham talking on this morning. It's plugged into some sort of charger, but I pull it loose. I've never used a phone like this before, but my fingers weirdly know what to do. I press a button and the phone comes to life. The first thing I see is all the text messages filling the screen. There's a couple from Lucy, my best friend, but most of them are from an unknown number. I start scrolling. The ones from Lucy are very strange. I'm so sorry. I hope you can forgive me someday. It will never happen again. I can't even imagine what she's talking about. In my memory, she has never done anything to be sorry for. But for all I know, she could have betrayed me yesterday. That's when the text messages came. I put that mystery aside for a moment and start looking at the other text messages. They all come from an unknown number, but I assume it must be Harry. I start reading through them, a lump rising in my throat.
Tess, we need to talk. I think you're in danger. Let me know you got this. I'll meet you anywhere. Are you okay? I don't know if you're getting these messages or if he took your phone, but you need to know I love you. Please message me. It's Harry. If he did anything to hurt you, I'll kill him.
I wonder how long he's been trying to contact me. How many days has he met with me covertly and warned me about this situation? I wish I could remember. It's so frustrating that I can't. I type a message into the phone, praying that he gets it. I have my phone. Thank you for telling me where it was. Can we meet? Three bubbles appear on the screen. He has to say yes.
We shouldn't. It never helps. And he's punishing you for it.
Please meet me. Please. Three more bubbles appear on the screen. I don't know what he's writing to me, but it seems to take an eternity. By the time the message appears, I half expect it to fill the entire screen, but instead it's one line.
Better we don't. Trust me.
And then,
delete these messages.
I almost hurl my phone across the room in frustration. I write him half a dozen more messages, begging him to meet with me. But he never responds again. Chapter 35. Graham comes home from work at 5 o'clock. Camilla opens the door for him, and he's carrying a bouquet of a dozen roses and a box of Godiva chocolates. Wow, Camilla comments. Someone is in a romantic mood today. Graham's blue eyes lock with mine.
It's been a hard week, and I wanted to do something nice for Tess.
I rise from the sofa, thinking of my phone stuffed under one of the cushions. It's on silent, so it won't ring or buzz to give me away. I was careful who I called today. I didn't contact Lucy, But I found my father's number programmed into the phone, and I tried calling him. There was no answer, but I left a message.
Thank you,
I say stiffly. The roses are beautiful.
If you'd like, he says, we can go out to dinner, anywhere you want.
The thought of going out to a restaurant with this man makes me physically ill, but I can't let on.
Maybe.
He looks me up and down in my jeans and sweatshirt.
You'd have to change, though, obviously.
He squints at my face.
And put on some makeup.
I turn my head so I don't have to look at him.
Maybe tomorrow.
I'll put those beautiful roses in some water, Camila says helpfully.
She takes the roses out of Graham's hands, but he is still staring at me.
Don't you want the chocolates?
I take them from him. I open the box and it's filled with white chocolate truffles, my favorite.
Your favorite, right?
He pushes his glasses up his nose.
Did I do good?
I nod slowly.
Thank you. It's very nice of you.
Well, you are my wife.
One corner of his lips quirks up.
I wanted to do something nice for you.
He has a nice smile. He's attractive. It would be easy to believe his lies if I hadn't found that phone this morning.
Listen.
He leans closer to me so that I catch a whiff of his expensive cologne.
I've got to get a little more work done in my office upstairs, but let's plan on going out tonight, okay? We'll have a nice time, anywhere you want to go.
Okay,
I hear myself saying. That sounds great. Graham leans in and gives me a peck on the cheek. It's all I can do to keep from jerking away from him. I watch my husband disappear up the stairs. My shoulders don't relax until the door to his office slams shut.
Well, that was nice of him, wasn't it?
Camila returns to the room carrying a large glass vase.
I wish I had a man coming home for me with flowers and candy.
You don't wish you had my life, I snort. It came out more bitterly than I intended. Camila stops, just looking at me. It almost seems like she wants to tell me something, but she's not sure if she should.
What?
I finally say.
Nothing.
She clears her throat.
I have to head out now, but I hope you do have a nice time at dinner.
Thanks. She hesitates.
And make sure to put Ziggy outside before Graham comes back down. You know how he feels about the dog.
That's right. For reasons I don't understand, Graham doesn't seem to like Ziggy much. I have a horrible feeling that one of these days, Ziggy might simply disappear during the night, and I'll never know he even existed, much like my phone. Camila heads out, leaving me behind. I don't know much about her, but unlike me, she has a life outside of this house. I envy her that more than I envy her incredible beauty. I miss being able to leave the house on my own. I miss driving. I miss going to work every day, and I'm beginning to be scared I will never experience any of these things ever again. Graham has disappeared into his office, and the door is closed. I plop down on the sofa, trying to figure out what to do next. Before I can figure it out, I get this strange sensation in my head. A fuzzy sensation, almost like I'm drifting off to sleep. The entire room melts away to white, and when I blink again, I'm outside the door to a room, my hand hovering over the doorknob. My hand drops onto the doorknob and I twist the knob. The room is an office at my home spa, with large windows in the back, a mahogany desk, and a leather chair. Sitting in the leather chair is my husband, Graham. And sitting on Graham is his secretary. At the sound of the door being yanked open, she scrambles off his lap, but it's too late.
Tess,
Graham gasps as he attempts to wipe Taylor's lipstick off his mouth. If she's going to be making out with my husband, she should wear a lipstick that doesn't rub off on him so easily.
Christ, Tess, I didn't realize you were—
I arch an eyebrow at him.
You didn't realize I work here? At my own company?
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Thurman.
Taylor anxiously tugs at the hem of her skirt, which has ridden way up during whatever it was she was doing with Graham.
I didn't mean to.
Don't worry about it. I wave a hand at her.
Also, you're fired, Taylor. Clean out your desk right now.
Immediately, Graham's 22-year-old secretary's eyes fill with tears.
But, Mrs. Thurman.
Get out, now. I give her a look that is not to be argued with.
You've got 20 minutes, and then I call security.
I hear the words come out of my mouth, but it's like I'm not in control of them. It's like this scene playing out before me has already happened, and I'm simply reliving it, which makes me impressed by how badass I am. Taylor hurries out of the office, tears streaming down her cheeks. Once she's gone, I set my gaze back on Graham, who looks distinctly pale. He is redoing the top button of his shirt and straightening out his tie. It occurs to me that if I had come to this office just a few minutes later, I could have ended up getting quite the show.
"It isn't how it looked, Tess," he says. "I swear to you."
A jab of pain hits me in the right temple.
"You mean you making out with your secretary in your office?"
Don't worry, Graham. I don't care about that. His brow crinkles. I shrug. We haven't had sex in 6 months. It's not like it's a huge shock that you're messing around behind my back. Now he looks perplexed. And for a moment, I enjoy it. I enjoy the split second of anticipation before I drop the bomb on him. He thought he could pull one over on me. Does he think I'm stupid? "I found the bank account," I tell him. "The Caribbean one. I found out what you've been up to, Graham. You piece of shit." His mouth falls open.
"Tess,
I want you out of here." I put my hands on my hips. "I want you to pack up your desk and get out of my company."
"Come on, Tess."
He holds his hands out to me.
"You don't want to do that. I've been with this company for over 6 years. You're never going to find a better accountant than me."
A better accountant than him? Is he joking? Anyone would be better. At least anyone who isn't stealing money from me. I get another jab of pain in my temple. Time to wrap this up. "I've locked you out of all the computers," I say briskly. "I alerted security, and if you're not gone in the next half hour, they're throwing you out." It finally hits him that I'm serious.
"Tess, please.
I also want you out of my house." I feel the sneer on my lips. "I had Jean pack up your bags, and I left them on the front porch." He sucks in a breath.
"Tess."
"Don't," I shake my head. "You're lucky I didn't burn your crap. I never want to look at you ever again. You're going to hear from my lawyers shortly. If you don't sign the divorce papers immediately, I'm calling the police and pressing charges." All the color has drained from Graham's face.
"Please don't do this, Tess. Look, this was all a misunderstanding."
It takes all my self-restraint not to laugh in his face. "I've got a meeting downtown right now. When I get back, you better be gone." I don't wait for a response. I've said everything I have to say. It feels awful enough to know that my own husband did this to me, and if I hadn't hired a second accountant, I might never have known. He might have kept siphoning money out of the company as my punishment for making him sign that prenup, and when he got enough money in the account, then what? Would he have saved it as a nest egg just in case, or would he have up and left me for somebody like Taylor? Luckily, I'll never get to know. I'm already running late for my meeting. I take the elevator down to the parking garage, and the valet brings me my Toyota. I was never interested in getting a sports car like Graham has. But maybe now I'll treat myself to something better, something fast and cute. Although the Toyota goes plenty fast. The streets are relatively empty, so I accelerate as much as I dare. That nagging pain in my temple flares up one more time, and I remind myself that pretty soon Graham will be out of my life forever. One headache out of the way. I press my foot down on the gas, and the car leaps forward. Vaguely, I'm aware that I should slow down, but I don't want to. I press the button to lower the windows, and it feels so good to have the wind whipping at my face as the scenery zips by. Graham is going to be gone. That asshole will be out of my life. Thank God. As my foot descends onto the gas, the windshield disappears from my view, and then everything turns white again. A second later, I'm back in my living room again, sitting on my sofa. For a moment, I just sit there shaking. I don't know what that was, but something tells me that what I just experienced was the memory of something that really happened to me. I discovered Graham had been stealing money from my company, and not to mention cheating on me, and then I tried to leave him. Except, was that when it happened? Was that when I got in the car accident that destroyed my brain? As quietly as I can, I dig my phone out from underneath the couch cushion and stare at the screen. I need to talk to Harry. I need to tell him what I remember. Except there are no other replies from Harry. He has truly decided to leave me alone. Tomorrow, I won't remember any of this. I won't remember my flashback about what Graham did to me before my accident. I won't remember what a liar he is. I won't even remember that Harry contacted me. I'll wake up in the morning next to Graham, and it will be like this day never happened. I'll read that letter I wrote to myself and think, this is my life.
Maybe Graham will let me have my phone, or maybe he won't. But there will be nothing else. The thought of it is like a hand squeezing my heart. I've got to do something. I run into the kitchen and grab the pen on the kitchen island. I don't know how much time I have before Graham comes back downstairs. I take the pen with me into the downstairs bathroom and close the door behind me. There's no lock. I pull down my pants. On the inside of my right thigh, as high up as I can manage, I write the words, "Find Harry." Then I write the phone number I have for him underneath. I'm taking a chance. It's possible Graham could spy the words I wrote on myself, or the writing could wash away before I have a chance to see it. But I'm hoping it won't. I'm hoping this will be a way to help me remember. I pull up my pants and come out of the bathroom. Ziggy is waiting for me outside, panting excitedly. At least he's happy. I rub his head. "What's up, boy?" And then I see what's in his mouth. It's a set of keys. Graham's keys. The car keys and the keys to open the front door. I can get out of here. Chapter 36. I don't have much time. Graham is upstairs in his office, and I'm sure it won't be long before he discovers his keys are missing. If I'm going to leave, it has to be right now. And I'm not sure I can do it alone. I slide my phone out of my pocket. I bring up the text messages from Harry, which I never deleted. Hell, I'll be in enough trouble if Graham discovers the phone. The text messages are the least of my problems. I quickly type in a message to Harry. "I found Graham's keys. I'm leaving this place, and I'm never coming back. Meet me at the McDonald's we always used to go to." He'll know what I mean by that. Back when we first bought the house and were feeling broke from the huge mortgage we signed, we tried to save money by eating at McDonald's. A lot. I would order 6 chicken nuggets and a small French fries with Diet Coke. Harry would get a quarter pounder with a Sprite and large fries. We always used to sit in the far corner at the same table if we could snag it. If I still remember, I'm sure he still remembers too. I grab the sneakers that I abandoned at the front door. I have to be quick. Graham could come out of his office at any moment. After I tie the laces, I check my phone again. This time, Harry has responded.
"This is a mistake. Don't do this. I can't meet you."
I type my answer. "I'm going anyway, whether you meet me or not, but I have no money and no driver's license. I could use your help." The three bubbles appear at the bottom of the screen. I can't wait for him to make up his mind. I have to leave. If I don't go now, I'll have missed my opportunity, and I don't know if I'll ever get another one. I imagine waking up tomorrow and remembering today. That would be nice. I shove my phone back in my pocket and grab my jacket. As I'm unlocking the front door, I hear whimpering next to me. I look down, and Ziggy is by my side. Shit, I can't leave him behind. Graham hates Ziggy. God knows what he'll do. "We're going on a little trip, Ziggy," I tell him. Hopefully, Ziggy is good during car rides. I've got my fingers and my toes crossed that Graham does not drive a stick shift, because I have no idea how to operate one of those. He's exactly the kind of guy who would drive a stick shift. But thank God his BMW seems to have automatic transmission. This morning, Graham told me something about how I couldn't drive because of having seizures. But truthfully, I don't believe a word he says anymore. I don't know if I have seizures or not. But I know how to operate a car, and I know how to get to that McDonald's. And despite what he said, I think Harry will be there, waiting for me. I'm counting on it. I herd my dog into the back seat of the car, then I slide into the driver's seat. The seats are leather, and there are so many controls, at first I'm scared I can't drive this car. But it's got an ignition and a gear shift to put the car in the drive. There's a gas pedal and a brake. That's all I need to know. The roads are crowded as I make my way down the familiar 20-minute route to McDonald's. It's rush hour, after all, but that might work to my advantage. Nobody will notice me. Harry and I can take off from here and nobody will even remember us. I hope he shows up. I think he will. Maybe. By the time I reach McDonald's, my hands are shaking. I don't know what to expect anymore. Maybe Harry was right. Maybe this was a mistake. I spent the day being suspicious of Graham, but it's obvious I did have a head injury. There's a giant scar on the right side of my skull. Maybe I've got this all wrong. I pull into the parking lot of the McDonald's. Ziggy lets out a yelp from the back seat. I crane my neck to look at him. "Listen, you've got to stay back there. I promise I'll be back soon." He whimpers again, like he's trying to tell me something. Unlike me, Ziggy remembers yesterday. If only he could talk, that would be such a big help.
I crack the window open a bit for him.
Then I lock the doors and head into the McDonald's. The restaurant is appropriately crowded for the dinnertime rush, and the smell of grease permeates every corner of the fast food restaurant. There's a low thrum of activity throughout the room. Families eating, orders being taken, fries being salted. I scan the room, my heart thumping in my chest. There must be at least 30 people in this restaurant. But no Harry. He didn't come. Damn it. Even though he said he wasn't coming, it's still a blow. But it's fine. I can do this myself. Okay, I don't have any money. That part isn't good. But I bet Graham has a 20 stashed away somewhere in the car. Or I could sell the car and trade it in for something much cheaper. Although I'm not sure how easy that will be if I don't have the title. But at least I could try to.
Tess?
I turn around. Oh my God, it's him. It's Harry. He came. This morning, when I saw him through the gate, I couldn't touch him. But now he's here in the flesh, inches away from me, and I can't help myself. I propel myself at him. And then we're kissing. And it's not a church kiss, that's for sure. I melt against him like it's been a decade since we've kissed, which it almost has been. He pulls me closer, his fingers strong and warm. This morning I wasn't sure if this would ever happen again for the rest of my life, and now here he is, and we're going to leave here together. When we finally separate, we're both breathing hard. I rub my chin with my finger, and it feels tender. Your beard is scratchy, I whisper. He manages to smile, but there's a worried crease between his eyebrows.
Tess, he says, did you get my last message?
I nod. About not coming? Yes, but you came anyway. Thank you. There's a panicked look on his face.
No, not that message. The one after.
I reach into my pocket and pull out my phone.
There's one final message from Harry on the screen, which I never saw before I left the house.
Leave your phone behind.
Harry's face falls.
You've got your phone.
I had to bring it so I could be in contact with you. He tugs at the collar of his shirt.
But he can track you through your phone. That's the only reason he ever let you have it in the first place.
I get a sinking feeling in my stomach. Oh.
It'll be okay, his Adam's apple bobs. But we need to get out of here right now. We'll ditch your phone.
He may not have even noticed I'm gone yet.
I think he has. Harry shakes his head. I think he gets an alert if you leave the house. But we've got a head start, and you took his car. But we have to go right now.
Harry leads me to the exit of the McDonald's. We've got time. Even if we just have 10 minutes, we can take off in Harry's car and he'll never know where we went. This will be fine. Except the second we get out of the McDonald's, I see him. Graham, standing there, a dark look in his eyes. And in the distance, I can hear the police sirens. Chapter 37.
Harrison Finch.
Graham has his arms folded across his chest. There's a smile curling his lips, and I want to punch him in his smug face. He thinks I'm coming with him, but I'm not. No way. He can't make me. Not while Harry is here.
That was a beautiful kiss you gave my wife, Graham continues. Very passionate. I enjoyed watching that. Thank you, he adds. It'll give you something to remember while you're sitting in prison, Harry.
I look up at Harry, who has turned pale. I try to reach for his hand, but he won't take it. He's not going to prison, I speak up. I came here willingly, and I want to go with him. Graham scoffs.
Right. I'm sure you do. But here's the thing, Tess. It's not up to you. You have severe cognitive deficits. I am your guardian, and Harry here is breaking the law. Aren't you, Harry?
No, he's not, I shoot back. I look over at Harry, who still has not said a word. He didn't do anything wrong.
He did plenty wrong. Graham bares his teeth like a feral animal. First off, he cheated on you with your best friend. That's total bullshit.
Harry breaks his silence to shout.
You and Lucy set me up, you asshole. You made her believe the truth.
Graham finishes.
And she doesn't know the truth now either, does she?
He lifts an eyebrow.
Do you want to tell her, Harry, or should I?
The sirens are getting louder. Harry looks like he's going to be sick.
It's not what you think, Tess,
His brown eyes are darting around the parking lot.
I swear, I didn't. Tess, you have a restraining order against Mr. Finch here.
Graham folds his arms across his chest.
Because he wouldn't leave you alone, even when we told him he was harassing you. He was putting all these crazy ideas in your head and taking advantage of the fact that you have memory problems. I had to go to court.
Graham flashes Harry a seething look.
And the court saw it my way.
My jaw drops open.
Harry? Is that true?
He opens his mouth, but before he can get any words out, a police car pulls into the McDonald's parking lot. An officer comes out of the vehicle and Graham waves him over. I can't believe this is happening. I want to tell Harry to run for it, but it's probably not a good idea. The officer approaches Harry, a stern expression on his face.
Harrison Finch?
Harry nods, his eyes on the ground.
Mr. Finch, you're under arrest for a violation of a restraining order.
Harry doesn't protest as the officer handcuffs him and leads him to his police car. Graham watches the whole thing with barely disguised glee. I can't believe it. There was a restraining order against Harry. No wonder he didn't want to come here and meet me. But he came anyway. God, I don't know what to think anymore.
Good riddance,
Graham says to me as the police car speeds off to take Harry to jail. His eyes soften as he turns to face me.
I'm sorry he tricked you that way. I didn't want you to know he'd been harassing you.
He wasn't harassing me, I mumble. He shakes his head.
All you know is what he did today. I had to take him to court, Tess. He was stalking you. It was scary and very inappropriate. But now you're safe.
Except somehow I don't feel safe. Graham holds out his hand and waggles his fingers.
Give me my keys.
For a moment, I consider refusing, but what good would that do me? There's no chance of me making a run for it to the car and taking off. He would catch me in half a second. So I fish the keys out of my pocket and hand them over to him.
Where's my car?
He asks.
I hope it's still in one piece. You weren't a great driver, even before.
I point to the far end of the parking lot. I tried to park in the corner so nobody would see it. An expensive car stands out like a sore thumb. We trudge back to the car. Ziggy sees us when we're about 10 feet away and starts barking like crazy. Graham stops short and glares at me.
Are you serious, Tess? You put that mud in my car? On my leather upholstery?
Yes.
Fine. You sit in the back with the dog. He better not chew up my car or I'm going to be really pissed.
Ziggy growls at Graham when he gets into the car, but I stroke his fur until he calms down. As we start driving back home, he rests his head on my lap. He looks as dejected as I feel. I didn't think I would ever be going back to that house, certainly not within half an hour of leaving. I had a chance to escape, and I blew it.
I know you're feeling upset about this whole thing,
Graham tells me as he halts at a red light.
But try not to think about it.
I grumble something under my breath.
I'll delete all the messages from him on your phone, he continues, and tomorrow it will be like it never happened. I'll block the number. You'll probably never see or hear from him again.
I squeeze my knees with my fists. He's right. All he has to do is delete those messages and I won't know they ever existed.
And I'll let you have your phone back,
he adds.
It's good for you, and it helps me know exactly where you are. I never would have found you so quickly if you hadn't brought it with you.
I squeeze my eyes shut, trying not to cry. I don't know what to think about what happened. Graham was telling the truth about the restraining order, considering Harry just got arrested. But I'm not sure what to believe. I don't think Harry was using me or manipulating me. After all, I was the one who made him come out tonight. When we get back home, Graham makes me put Ziggy out in the backyard. I don't know if Ziggy is used to sleeping in the house, but he doesn't seem to want to go out there. When I shut the door, he starts whimpering. It's a nice night, so I don't feel that bad about it, but I wonder what we do when it's cold or raining. We don't still make him sleep in the backyard when it rains, do we? I wish I'd left my phone behind before I went to McDonald's. If I had, we would be on our way somewhere far away right now. Graham would probably still be working in his office, oblivious to the fact that I was even gone. After I shut the back door, Graham digs out his keys to lock it. I'm now officially trapped in the house again. Just like when I woke up this morning, I have accomplished nothing except to get Harry thrown in jail.
I don't know if I'm in the mood to go out to dinner anymore, he says. What do you feel like eating?
My stomach turns at the thought of eating any food prepared by this man. Don't worry about it. I'll make myself a sandwich or something.
I don't mind making it for you.
I said, don't worry about it. He hesitates by the refrigerator door.
There are some pills you're supposed to take at night to prevent seizures. I should.
Forget it.
A doctor prescribed these for you. I can show you the bottle.
I said, forget it, Graham. I'm not taking anything you want to give me. He turns his blue eyes on me.
You still believe that asshole was trying to help you, don't you?
I don't know what to say. The answer is yes, and that isn't the answer he wants to hear.
You caught him with another woman.
A muscle twitches under his eye.
Your best friend. He betrayed you in the worst possible way, and I was there for you when you were heartbroken. He blew it, and he despised you for refusing to take him back. And then you got in this accident, and here I am, doing everything I can to take care of you. But Harry,
he sucks in a breath.
He saw what happened to you, and he figured this was an opportunity to mess with you, to make you hate me.
I just stand there, staring at him.
I am so sick of this bullshit, he growls.
With those words, he storms off. It's a relief that he's gone, and I take the opportunity to dig around in the refrigerator for some food. I find a loaf of bread and some cold cuts, and I make myself a quick sandwich. And I grab one of the glasses above the sink and pour myself some water. Ziggy is barking his head off outside the door. I can't believe our neighbors don't complain. I wish I could let him inside. I'd rather sleep with my dog than with my husband. But I can't open the door anymore. I don't have the key. I just have to try to ignore him, even though every bark is a jab at my heart. I'm about 5 bites into my sandwich when Graham returns to the kitchen. But this time, he's holding a sheet of paper and a pen. He slams the paper down in front of me.
We are going to nip this in the bud, he says, once and for all.
I look down at the blank piece of paper. I don't understand. He holds out the pen to me.
It's time for you to write another letter to yourself. We took it too easy on Harry in the last letter. You need to let yourself know what a bad guy he is, and that you need to stay far away from him from now on.
I remember reading that letter first thing this morning. I found it comforting because it was in my own handwriting. I didn't know who I could trust, but I knew I could trust myself. Now I have a bad feeling about how the letter came about. I'm not doing it, I say.
Yes, Graham says. You are. It's for your own good.
Ziggy's barking has gotten louder. I push the piece of paper away and take another bite of my sandwich. Forget it. Maybe you can lock me in this house, but you can't make me write a letter to myself.
You really don't believe me, do you?
He adjusts his spectacles on his nose.
You saw the police take Harry away, and you still trust him over me?
I lift my chin. Yes. I absolutely do. 2 spots of pink appear on Graham's cheeks.
Well, that's too damn bad. You're writing the letter anyway.
No, I won't. I take a sip of water, peering at him over the rim of my glass. You can't make me.
Can't I?
There's something in Graham's voice that makes me feel uneasy.
Because I think I can.
I stare at Graham, my heart pounding. Ziggy sounds almost hysterical outside the door. Graham turns around, walks to the back door, and slams on it with the palm of his hand, loud enough to make me jump.
Shut the fuck up, you goddamn stupid dog!
I cringe, but it works. Ziggy's barks subside back to a whimper. Graham turns around and strides back over to me.
Here's the thing, Tess. I have total control over every aspect of your life. If you don't write the letter, first thing tomorrow, Ziggy and I are taking a little drive down to the local pound. The one where, if you don't get adopted in a week, then...
The pieces of the sandwich in my stomach churn. I'm going to be sick. You wouldn't.
Oh, I definitely would.
He smiles at me.
And in the morning, you won't even know Ziggy existed. Except he'll remember you. He'll remember you when he is in his cage, wondering where you are, why you let this happen to him. Maybe you'll be his last thought when they give him the injection.
I feel like I'm going to choke. I look into Graham's eyes, and I realize he means it. He will absolutely do what he's threatening. Fine, I manage.
I'll write the letter.
He lifts his eyebrows.
Now is that so hard?
I glare at him. He slides the paper toward me again.
I'll make this easy for you, Tess. I'm going to tell you exactly what to say.
Chapter 38. I don't know where Graham ended up putting the letter I wrote. I feel sick at the thought of the words I wrote in the letter. I said horrible things about Harry. In the morning, I'm going to read that letter and I'm going to believe Harry Finch is a terrible person. But I have one safety net. Graham confiscated my phone, but I've still got Harry's number written on my thigh. In the morning, I'll see it there. I'll know he was trying to help me, and maybe I'll be able to find him. Unless he is still in jail. I climb into bed at around 10 o'clock. At first, I'm worried Graham is going to climb into bed next to me, but he doesn't make any movement to take off his clothing.
I've still got work to do, he tells me.
You mean for my company? He sneers at me.
If not for me, your company would be bankrupt by now.
I'm not so sure about that.
Anyway, he says, go to sleep. I'll come in later, and in the morning you won't remember any of this. You'll believe me when I tell you what a piece of shit Harry Finch is.
Maybe. Maybe not. Graham shuts the light as he leaves the room, and I lie in bed alone, staring at the ceiling. I wonder where Harry is right now. I assume he's in a jail cell somewhere, maybe sleeping on a cot. I hope he is still thinking about me the way I'm thinking about him. He's my last thought as my eyes drift closed. It's much later in the night when I get woken up by a sharp sensation. At first, I think it must be morning, and it's a miracle because I still remember everything about the day before. But no, it's still pitch black outside. It's the middle of the night, and I hear movement within the bedroom. I rub my right buttock, which feels sore to the touch. I don't know what that was. That pricking sensation just came out of nowhere. I roll over in bed, blinking through the darkness as my eyes adjust. Graham is standing at the foot of the bed. Graham? My voice is slurred by sleep. What are you doing? He doesn't answer me right away. I squint through the darkness, and I can just barely make him out. There's something in his hand. Oh my God, it's a syringe.
This is so much easier to administer when you take the other medications that knock you out.
He slides the cap back onto the syringe.
That way, we don't have to have a conversation about it. You mostly sleep through it.
I don't know what it was he gave me, but my brain feels fuzzy. I don't know if it's from sleep or whatever was in that syringe. What did you do?
The same thing I do every night.
It's true, then. I'm not losing my memory because of a brain injury. Graham is drugging me. He's doing this to me. And I don't even know why. Could he really be this evil?
Go back to sleep, he says.
You drugged me. I choke out the words. He gives me an exasperated look.
Go to sleep.
I'm not going to sleep. I try to sit up in bed, but it's impossible. My body feels almost paralyzed. You just injected something into me. Why would you do that?
Just go to sleep. It'll be easier that way. Stop trying to fight it.
You took my whole life. I scream at him. But I'm not actually screaming. My voice is a whisper. You're a monster. You won't get away with this. Graham doesn't even answer me. He shoves the capped syringe into his pocket and walks out of the room. I try to get up, but my body won't obey me. Sleep is tugging me under, suffocating me. I open my mouth to shout for help, but nothing comes out. In another few seconds, I'll be unconscious. I can't fight it anymore. I can't. Day 5. Chapter 39. Dear Tess, this is a hard letter to write to you, but you need to know the truth about Harrison Finch. Many years ago, you were engaged to be married, but you called off the engagement 2 months before the wedding when you caught him kissing another woman. It was a massive betrayal. Of course, he begged you to forgive him. You were very successful at that point, and he had become accustomed to living a certain lifestyle. He didn't want to lose you or your money, but you held strong. You should be proud of yourself. Throughout this tragedy, Graham was there for you. He was a friend, and then later he became more than a friend. Your wedding was the happiest day of your life, and after you were in a terrible car accident and lost your memory, he gave up his life as he knew it to take care of you and save your business. Unfortunately, Harry Finch saw your accident as an opportunity. Harry found you and convinced you that Graham didn't have your best interests at heart. He took advantage of your memory problems and the fact that you couldn't remember the terrible things he did to you. He told you lies, constructing a world in which he was the good guy. Fortunately, you were able to go to court and get a restraining order to keep him from bothering you ever again. At the time I am writing this letter, Harry is in jail for attempting to kidnap you. That's where he belongs. Stay far away from this man. He only means you harm. Love, Tess. Graham, who is apparently my husband, emerges from the bathroom just as I finish reading the letter I wrote to myself. It's the second letter from myself. The first just explained about the accident, but the second one has a more ominous tone. He stands over me, waiting to hear what I have to say. But I don't know what to say. Last night, I fell asleep next to Harry Finch, happy in the knowledge that I was going to spend the rest of my life with him. Now, I'm reading a letter to myself, talking about all the ways he betrayed me.
I'm sorry.
Graham sits beside me. He looks casually handsome in a pair of slacks and a checkered shirt. Maybe more handsome than Harry was. It's hard to compare the two because they look so different.
I know the last thing you remember is being happy with him. I hate to show you this, but you need to know. I don't want him to fool you again.
The paper crumbles in my hands. Right.
It's Saturday, he says.
That's comforting, because the night Harry proposed to me was Friday, so it doesn't feel like I've lost more than one night. One night and 7 years.
I have some work to do in my office here, but maybe we can spend some time together later. We can go see a movie or take your dog to the park.
I have a dog? He smiles at me. Graham has a nice smile. He seems like a kind man. I'm lucky to have him.
Yes, I bought him for you after your accident.
A lump forms in my throat. Graham and I obviously had a good life together before my accident. My fingers go to the right side of my skull, where I felt a dull ache when I woke up. Under the strands of my hair, I feel a thick scar running over the skin in the shape of a C.
They had to do surgery, he explains, watching me. They had to drain the blood.
At his explanation, I feel mildly ill the way I do when anything medical is discussed. I almost want to put my fingers in my ears and start singing to shut out anything else he needs to say.
Why don't you go take a shower? Graham suggests. It always makes you feel better.
I nod, glad he doesn't want to share more details about my horrible accident. I remain on the bed for another minute, watching the man who claims to be my husband leave the room. I don't understand it. I would have thought even if I lost my memory, I would still remember my own husband. Why don't I remember him? He's obviously telling the truth. There are pictures of the two of us all over the dresser. There's even a wedding photo. I rise from the bed and pick up the wedding photo. The frame is heavy and feels expensive. I look at the couple in the photograph. They look so young and happy, with so many good years ahead of them. I run my fingers over the glass, tracing the array of cracks distorting the image. I suppose it must have fallen at some point, and we never got around to replacing it. In the scheme of things, it's trivial, but there's something ominous about the effect. Graham and I, holding hands, me in a wedding dress and him in a tuxedo, with a giant crack slashing our faces in two. I replace the photo on the dresser and make my way to our beautifully renovated bathroom. Harry and I had such grand plans for that bathroom, and it's gorgeous, but nothing like the way we would have done it. I can't imagine us installing a bidet, for starters. Harry would have laughed if I even suggested it. Not that there's anything wrong with a bidet. I've heard they're quite nice. We just weren't bidet kind of people. Maybe Graham is, though. I close the door to the bathroom behind me. I start to turn the lock, but then realize the lock is gone. We did have a lock. That part I remember. Why would I have gotten it removed? Well, it doesn't matter. I don't need a lock on the bathroom door. I remember the words in the first of the two letters I read, the one that explained about my accident. Some previous version of myself warned me not to panic, just accept my situation and try to make the best of it. I suppose that's all I can do in this situation. I live in a beautiful house, and I have a husband who cares about me. It could be much worse. I pull my nightshirt over my head. I drop it on the lid of the toilet. Then I pull down my underwear. But as I look down, I notice something on my upper thigh. Something written in pen. My eyes widen as I read the words placed there for me alone to read. Find Harry. And then a phone number. Chapter 40. I have very little privacy. When Graham told me he would work most of the day, I assumed I would be alone on the first floor of the house. I was wrong. A woman named Camilla showed up at breakfast time, and after the meal was over, she cheerily started cleaning the living room. She is the cleaning woman, but it's increasingly obvious her actual job is to keep an eye on me, which means it's not easy to reach out to the phone number I found scribbled on my leg. After I saw that message on my leg, I didn't know who to trust. There was an entire letter I wrote to myself in my own handwriting, warning me about Harry Finch. But the message on my own skin superseded that. The message on my leg was meant for my eyes only. And what it comes down to is that I know I can trust Harry. I don't believe he did anything terrible to me. He would never. I just need to find a time to call him, when nobody will overhear. Besides Camilla and Graham, there are two other numbers on the favorites list on my phone, Lucy and my father. Two more people I would trust with my life. I'm desperate to talk to either one of them, hoping they can shed light on what's going on, but neither one of them picks up. I leave them both rambling messages, begging them to call me back as soon as they can. Camilla spritzes our coffee table with a lemon-scented cleaning fluid and wipes it down with a paper towel. Everything in our house smells vaguely of lemons. I feel guilty that I'm not helping her. But at the same time, I'm not even sure why she's cleaning the coffee table. It's spotless. The paper towel comes away clean. Is this your only job? I ask Camilla. Oh, yes. She bends down over the coffee table to give me an eyeful of cleavage. This is a full-time job. I watch her furiously scrubbing the clean table, working at an invisible coffee ring. Do you enjoy working here? She laughs throatily. Sure, why not? I shrug. I don't know, it seems like it would be kind of boring. Every job has its boring moments, doesn't it? I remember when I started up my home spa. I had always wanted to own my own business, and I loved every minute of it. I looked up the company on my phone and discovered that it took off in a big way. I wonder if I still loved it when it got huge. I hope I did. My phone rings on the sofa next to me. My heart leaps in my chest, and for a moment, I'm sure it's got to be Harry. But no. The name flashing on the screen is Lucy. That's almost as good. I snatch up the phone and click on the green button to take the call. It's amazing how easy it is for me to work this phone, even though I don't remember having one before today. Lucy? I say breathlessly. Tess! It's Lucy's voice. But there's something strange about her tone. I can't quite put my finger on it. Hey, sweetie. How are you doing? I've been better. My voice cracks on the words. I know, Lucy says before I can explain further. I'm sure it's so weird for you, but I just want you to know that I have your back. I promise you that. Thank you. I squeeze the phone in my hand, but there's an uneasy feeling in my stomach. I didn't write Lucy's name on my leg. I instructed myself to find Harry. I appreciate that. Of course. There's a ruffling of papers in the background. I'm busy at the moment, but maybe I'll come by later in the afternoon and we can do something girly together. Like we can go to the mall and have a makeover. Why not? My face is already unfamiliar to me. May as well make it over.
That would be great.
Perfect, Lucy squeals. I know how you must feel right now, but we're going to have so much fun together. I think about spending an afternoon with Lucy, and the sick feeling in my stomach dissipates just a little bit.
Thank you. I don't know what I would do without you, Lucy. You're my best friend.
Oh, she laughs, and once again, I can't help but notice there's something off about her voice.
You've managed just fine without me, but I'm happy to help.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course, anything.
I glance over at Camilla, who is vacuuming on the other side of the room. I don't know if she can hear me, but I'm willing to risk it. Is Graham good to me? She hesitates. It's a split second, and if anyone else had done it, I might not have even noticed, but I know Lucy so well.
He's a great husband to you, Tess.
There's something else. There's something she's not telling me. I want to grill her further, but I can't do it in front of Camilla. I'll have to talk to her later when we leave the house together.
Okay. Thank you. I'll see you later.
I almost hang up the phone, but before I do, Lucy's voice stops me.
Tess?
Yes?
You're my best friend, too. And I meant it when I said I have your back.
She sounds so sincere. I've known Lucy forever. I've known her even longer than I've known Harry, and certainly longer than Graham, who I hardly know at all. I wish I could talk to my father. But the truth is, I'm closer to Lucy than I am to him. Maybe I should tell her about the phone number on my thigh. Maybe she could give me advice on how to handle this. Or maybe she can stop me from making a mistake. After all, how can I trust random scribbling on my leg? How do I even know for sure I was the one who wrote it? I open my mouth to tell her everything, but before the words can come out, I clamp it shut. Those words written on my leg were for my eyes only. I feel it in my gut.
I'll see you later, Lucy, I croak. See you later, Tess. Hang in there.
After I end the call, I notice Camilla has turned off the vacuum and is looking at me from across the room. But as soon as she notices me noticing, she averts her eyes and gets busy with the mop. At this rate, our house is going to be the cleanest one on the block.
That was my best friend, Lucy, I say.
I'm not sure why I need to explain myself to her. She nods vaguely, like she wasn't eavesdropping on my conversation.
Oh, that's nice. Have you met Lucy?
I have, a few times.
Is she around a lot?
Camilla frowns as she pushes her mop across the floor.
She's here a good amount, but...
But what?
She stares down at the splash of water created by the mop. If I'm not mistaken, she doesn't seem like she likes Lucy much. I don't know why I care, though. I've known Lucy since college, whereas I met Camilla this morning. It's not much of a contest who I trust more. Yet there's something about Camilla that I like. Something about her throaty laugh. She seems like an honest person, someone I could imagine being friends with in another life. But there's no way she's going to tell me the truth about Lucy or Harry or Graham or any of that. She is our employee, after all, not my friend.
Are you married?
I blurt out. Camilla looks up at me in surprise, as if she was expecting another question, but then her lips twist into a grin.
Getting a little personal, aren't we?
If it would help, you can ask me if I'm married.
She lifts the mop off the floor.
No, I'm not married.
Children?
No brothers or sisters. My parents are gone. I have nobody.
Oh, I shift on the sofa. I'm sorry.
No reason to be sorry. In some ways, it's easier not to have anybody. I have less to lose.
I grope for my phone, now nestled in my pocket. Talking to Lucy just now didn't help at all with all my questions. It just created new questions. As soon as Camilla goes upstairs to clean, I'm going to call that number. I can't do it in front of her. Maybe she looks like an honest person, but looks are deceiving. I don't know what she's going to report back to my supposed husband.
Have you ever been in love?
I ask her.
In love?
She crinkles her nose.
No, definitely not.
You're acting like it's a bad thing.
I wouldn't know either way.
I was in love once.
My voice cracks on the words. I don't want her to know who I'm talking about, but I can't help myself. It's all I can think about.
I recommend it.
Do you?
Yes, it was nice, but I know what you mean about having something to lose.
I swipe at my right eye to prevent tears from falling. Because once it's gone, it's all you can think about. It's hard to be happy after that.
Camila shoves the mop into a bucket in the corner of the room. She looks at me, her brow crinkling.
I'm done down here. I'm going to clean upstairs.
Our eyes meet and my hands break out in a sweat. Does she know what I'm planning to do? Somehow, I feel like she might know. Something about the way she's looking at me. And if that's the case, will she tell Graham? Maybe the second she gets upstairs, she'll go right to him and tell him what she suspects. I hope she doesn't, but I have to take the chance. Once she's gone upstairs, I take out the little piece of paper where I transcribe the number written on my leg. I'm not sure what to expect. The letter I wrote to myself said Harry is in jail. What if I can't reach him? But I know the answer. If I don't reach him today, I'll leave another note for myself. I'll keep trying until I find him. My hands are shaking as I type the number into my phone. I hold it to my ear, looking up the stairwell to make sure nobody is within earshot. The phone rings and rings. And rings. Damn it. He's not going to pick up. I should have known. Who knows if that note I wrote to myself was even real? Maybe I was just delusional. The 10 digits are probably just made-up numbers. I was kidding myself to think I was ever going to see Harry again.
Tess, is that you?
Harry!
I grip the phone with both hands, immediately regretting the volume.